This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42.
Puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Conan, I got a question for you.
Yo, what it do? Boom.
Are you looking for one of the most exhilarating and effective forms of home fitness?
Bro, I think I found it.
Yeah, well, let me introduce you to Fight Camp, an interactive at-home boxing. Fight Camp brings the best workout in the world into your home and makes it fun. Explore thousands of workouts led by expert trainers with decades of experience teaching proper boxing form and technique. Fight Camp also has live punch counting stats that motivate you to push harder and help you map out your progress. Knock out achievements or go head-to-head against other members from across the country or across the living room. One of the best things about Fight Camp is that it makes boxing accessible to everyone. No matter what your fitness level is, what your age is, or what your experience with boxing is, you can do it. And you're going to have a great time. How do you think you'd rank on the Fight Camp leaderboard? Do you think you'd be in first place? You used to box,
not,
right, Conan?
I don't know if I'd be in first place. I'm not in that type of shape, but it's gotten me into great shape. It's getting me into great shape.
Yeah, so join the biggest boxing community in the world without leaving your home. Fight Camp packages start at just $99. They even offer some great financing options and get started for as low as $9 a month. To get everything you need, go to fightcamp.com/Conan to learn more. That's fightcamp.com/KONAN.
Have you or Joe received yours yet?
I haven't got mine yet.
Have you, Joe? Yes, I have, actually, yeah. I have it set up right down here in the basement.
Tell people your experience and I'll tell them mine.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it doesn't take up much space. It's on a stand, so it's not, you don't have to hang anything from your ceiling. And you can go on and use all the different lessons and stuff. Like for me, I never had any boxing training, you know, so I was like, let me do this the right way. So I go on there, I've taken the beginner classes and moved on. It keeps your scores, it keeps your progress, it tracks everything. And, you know, the trainers know what they're doing, and it's a lot of fun watching the different clips and competing. You compete against anyone you want. You compete against friends if they're on, people around the world, whatever. There's international leaderboards. And it's a great way to exercise. It's a lot of fun.
Right. The great thing about this thing is you can do it in your house. So you don't have to go to a gym, pay gym memberships, you know, change in the gym clothes, park. You know, sometimes you want to get a late workout in and you can't because the gym is closed, you know, or wait for people to put their weights back or whatever. This thing right here conditions you. It tones your arms, your legs, your stomach, everything. And it gives you cardio at the same time. You can put it in your house and you can work out whenever you want. And the great thing is it has different programs. So if you want to work out for 15 minutes, you only got 15 minutes of workout, you get a 15-minute workout. And if you got an hour, you can get an hour workout in. It's great. I love it, and I'm glad that I purchased it, and it's helping me get into shape. Check out FightCap.com. Boom. If you're into especially African-American history or just American history at all, I went into a fascinating, fascinating rabbit hole on Frederick Douglass. I knew a little bit about him, but I didn't know as much as I did. And I just want to just to give you a little backstory, just very little backstory. I was just, you know, just like you go through rabbit holes. So I was just reading this thing about Frederick Douglass, and basically this guy, you know, and this is still kind of fresh in my head. You know, he grew up in Maryland, and he didn't know who his dad was. He thinks his dad was his master. His mom was black. He grew up without his mom. He grew up with his grandmom, and his mom would come at night, only at night. I guess she would escape or get away because she was in a plantation 12 miles away. And she would come at night and she would like, you know, nurse him to sleep and hug him. And then when he would wake up, she was gone, you know. Then at around the age of 7, his grandmother actually brought
him. What year is this?
This was probably like 1840s or something.
Yeah, mid-1800s.
Right? Yeah. And so then his grandmother one day, who raised him and he loved, brought him to a plantation and told him to look for some food. And when he turned around, she was gone. And so, you know, he went into slavery. He exchanged hands a lot. He had very cruel masters. At one point, one guy was, he was known kind of as a Negro breaker. And he was 16 years old, and he would whoop John Brown with a whip. Well, first, the first thing that really traumatized him is he saw his aunt getting whooped, and he was hiding behind a door, and that was a way to control slaves, and it was also a way to instill fear in slaves. They would change him like property, like, hey, I got a car for your slave, you know, like that's basically, you know, they just exchanged, it was their property. And this one guy, I remember his name was Covey, and he was known as a slave breaker. And when he was 16 years old, he whooped the shit out of this guy like really bad almost every day, to the point where his back hadn't healed and he was still whipping him. And one day he rebelled against him and they got into a fist fight, he said, which lasted 2 hours. I don't know how you fight for 2 hours. But it lasted for 2 hours, and he said that the guy was so embarrassed to say that he couldn't control this slave that he never told anybody. But he said that was the day I became a man, he said, because he never touched me again. Then there was this one lady, Ald, I believe was her last name, and she had taught him how to read and write. But her husband said, you know, you can't teach a Negro how to read and write, because the next thing you know, he's going to want his freedom. So she kind of turned against him. So secretly, he would go and get pamphlets and he would read them himself. And there were a couple white boys in the neighborhood that would teach him how to read. And he'd go to church secretly and he trained himself to the point that he did an autobiography about his life. And nobody believed that a black man was that eloquent. And they thought somebody wrote the book for him. And it was like a bestseller. He was really, really... A very straightforward, very honest man, to the point that Mark Twain actually wrote to Abraham Lincoln and told him that he should make him like the postmaster general, or he should give him like a position, because this was a man of high moral character, beyond reproach, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Mark Twain was Mark Twain. And so one day Mark Twain told Frederick Douglass that Lincoln wanted to talk to him, and he really didn't believe him, but he just showed up in the White House anyways. And he said he got in a long line. There were a lot of people outside. You can, I guess back then it was by appointment or some shit, but he said that when he got there, was a lot of people, and he was the only black guy there. People were like, what are you doing here? N-word, you know, and making fun of him and all this. And so he sent a card and he said, I'm here to see Abraham Lincoln. Everybody laughed at him. And Lincoln said, bring him in. And he said that, this is why I love Lincoln. And he said that he didn't think Lincoln was really for the black man. He just wanted to end the war, but he did do a lot for the black man. Well, that's saying a lot because back then, you know.
Right.
And so he said that he went in there. He said, for a man with such a high position, for, you know, you would think he had all these fucking luxuries and shit. He said he was just in a simple chair. There were a whole bunch of documents around him. And there were all these secretaries around him. He goes, my name is, this is classy, bro. He goes, hello, my name is Frederick. He goes, I know who you are. He goes, sit down, please. I want to talk to you. And he says, what can we do about the Negro situation? It affects me. I don't think this is right. I don't think it's morally right. I don't think that's what the Lord would want. You know, and they started to fucking talk, you know. And then later on, he came again to the White House unannounced, and Lincoln let him in again. And he said he asked him some question. I forgot what the question was, but he asked him a question, and Frederick Douglass was very humble. He goes, I don't think you want to know what my opinion is. I'm not like worthy. You're not worthy of listening to my opinion on this subject. He goes, oh, no, yes, you are. If there's anybody's opinion I want to hear, it's yours. And that's very classy. But anyways, so Lincoln gave him a position as the ambassador to Haiti. And then President Garfield also gave him a position as like the postmaster general for Washington, D.C. And he ended up buying like this big house in Maryland. He ended up doing two more books. Then he said that he was afraid his owner was going to reclaim him because he was getting really famous. So he went to Ireland and England on a speaking tour. He says that back then a lot of Negroes would do that because there was no racism there, which is kind of funny to me because England's pretty racist. And he said that
The Irish were enslaved years before. Yeah. So that's right. Yeah.
By the English.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So he said, especially Ireland, he really put over Ireland. And there was some fucking freedom fighter, abolitionist guy in Ireland. I don't know his fucking name. I'd have to look for it. That he met there, that he was very, that like was kind of like a mentor to him. He said that he loved Ireland and that he was just amazed at how poor it was. That was the main thing. He goes, if you thought the ghettos were bad in the United States, you should have seen them in Ireland. But he said that it was amazing to him that he was treated like a white guy. You know, he could go into the same taxi, into the same restaurant. He was afforded the same courtesies. He wasn't insulted, because that was another thing. You know, you hear about Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks must have been influenced by him because he was on a train. And they were segregated back then, and he refused to sit in the black section, and they kicked him out.
Says here the guy in Ireland, his name was Daniel O'Connell.
Okay, so that's the guy. Yeah. I don't really know much about him, but and he helped Harriet Tubman with the Underground Railroad, and then he made two more autobiographies, which sold a lot of money, and became very rich, and people couldn't believe that he was such a great orator because he was self-taught. You know, just a fascinating story, bro. It's just a fascinating fucking story of a guy that started out with nothing, you know. And like, I remember that I was reading that he went to this school for colored kids or black kids. And he was telling him that when he was young, he knew a boy that would sleep in sacks head first, and then he'd put his feet in ashes and to keep warm. And he would find corn and he would roast it, and he would find chickens and get eggs and he would roast them. And that's how he ate. And that he taught himself how to, and that this little boy was an orphan and he didn't know his parents, that he taught himself to read and write. And now look at him, and his name is Frederick Douglass. And he was like a big inspiration, and they would call him all over the United States to, you know, do speeches, because he was like a great orator, you know, just a great man.
You know what, too, is this? It's kind of interesting if you think about it, right? Is that slavery was, you know, generally accepted,
right,
as kind of like a way of life, right? But you can tell, and you can tell, like, society today, okay, that people that, like, you know, if you strip away, like, if you judge a person on the color of their skin, you know, you're not going to have as many friends as if you didn't. And it's just like interesting, like, you know, you find situations like this where you see like the same thing today is like you like people just because you like them regardless of their skin color. They bring stuff to the table. They're like fascinating people to listen to. They're like, you know, something, and it doesn't really matter what their color is, right? I think that I had a conversation with Vince about this today, and it's a similar kind of, you know, what we're talking about here, okay? Is that I think it's fascinating that the news, okay, like, because we're supposed to watch the news and like just get a basic, like, you know, like basic facts. You know, but now we see the news, you know, Fox's right wing narrative, you know, CNN, MSNBC, left wing narrative, you know, you get a narrative, right? And it's just fascinating to me how, like, the news, where we're supposed to find out exactly what happened, we're supposed to find out the nuance, you know, why did this happen? What are the facts? What was this person? They separate things and try to, like, try to paint the pictures, like, strictly from the racial standpoint. Like, what was the color of one person's skin? What was the color of the other person's skin? And, like, if one was black and one was white and it was a white oppressing a black, that's a huge story. And it's like we don't really get into, like, you know, the nuances of human beings. And it's kind of like it's aware that we wouldn't get to the core of what happens sometimes. Like, you see this thing with, like, you know, people like the right-wing sites, they'll post, you know, two black teenagers – you know, beat up and raped a white girl, right? And they'll post that. And the narrative is like, oh, look at what these black people are doing, right? But then, like, you find out, like, you wonder, like, oh, well, do we really know anything about these two black kids other than the color of their skin? Like, what if they were abused growing up? What if they were, like, you know, what if their mother, their father, you know, used to beat their mother and stuff like that? Like, what was their life experiences that they went through to get to this point that they're, like, completely lawless? You know, they're beating people up. They're just
But listen.
But so then you take a situation. You take a guy like Fred. What's his? We just talked.
Frederick Douglass.
It's like the guy had like the different upbringing, the different principles, different, like, you know. So, and I think that's what we miss when we try to, like, you know, drive these racial narratives in the year 2022. Because, dude, like, you've seen, like, we talk about back then. So, bro, the guy was like a slave, but he was out doing speaking tours. Like, he had a master, stuff like, you know, but it was still the existence of slavery. It's like, well, I can't do anything because, you know, I have my master. You know, I don't want my meal. You know, so it's weird. But the guy was, like, forging relationships with other white people and stuff, everything. So, like, you know, because people can understand other human beings on a human level when you get to know them. Mm-hmm. We paint all of our stories, like all of our narratives, all our racial narratives, everything, based on what we see on the news. It's like, we don't know these people. We don't know anything about them. We don't know why they did this. We're just finding out that, like, you know, there was a situation, you know, two white guys killed a black kid, and we're just, like, assuming everything, and we really don't know any facts of the story. And the same thing with, like, two black people kill a white person. And we just paint the narrative as, like, we don't know anything. We don't know any of the situations, stories, everything. And I think that's, like, what the media has done is been kind of dishonest in, like, you know, stoking this racial tension when it doesn't really exist like it used to. You know, because, like, exists. There's a lot of integration today. They're trying to make it, but like it was. But bro, there's so much integration going on right now. There's so many people that get along with different cultures and races and stuff. Everything, and they're all, like, you know, stuff, that the fact that they constantly try to still paint this picture as, like, white and black, white supremacists and stuff. It's just, I don't know. It's just like
I think you're wrong there. It still exists. Yeah, not exists. As bad as before.
Not as bad as before.
Trump ripped the lid off of that. I mean, he showed there's racism and ignorance still exist. And that's why I'm glad today your boy, your mentor, your sensei got it in the fucking ass. $965 million, Alex Jones. Pay up the ass, bitch.
Wow.
I'm so fucking glad.
Bro, let me ask you a question. You actually think that what he did is worth $960? I don't watch Alex Jones.
No, but I'm glad he's paying. I'm glad he's paying more than $50 million.
Yeah. You were misinformation right there. You're saying I don't listen to Alex Jones.
I've been following the whole trial.
Okay, well, I haven't.
Yeah.
Okay, but my point is, what type of slippery slope does that create right now?
No slippery slope. You don't go out there and you fucking invent bullshit and you fucking traumatize parents whose kids have been murdered and monetize off of it.
Let me ask you a question.
That's what it is. I don't give a fuck what card
you don't think the
argument
news,
you give me.
Well, you don't think the news puts out misinformation, disinformation?
Yes, they do, and they should be held liable. Just like I also think. Just like I also think. Wait a minute. Just like I also think that any fucking politician that takes advantage of his position or all the perks they have, they should be held to a higher standard and fucking jailed than they.
Okay, but they're not.
But they should be.
Okay, but they're not.
But they should be. But they should be.
What this is trying. What this is trying to do. Okay, with this type of monetary penalty, is this trying? This is literally trying to like suppress free speech.
No,
you're absolutely, bro. No. $900 billion for
yeah,
for
I'm glad.
Speech.
I'm glad.
That's not
free
asinine.
Speech. That's being a fucking dick.
That's asinine. Because if you want to do that,
well, I agree with it. How about that? I agree so, with it.
I would agree, like but $1 billion.
Yeah, break the bum,
bro.
Yeah.
There's okay. Then we need to open up. The fairness statute here on people of the, you know, like politicians, people have done similar.
The only thing you need
okay?
to do is open up your mouth and take a big one in it, because there's no way I'm going to in any way condone any person who goes out there and they monetize off the misery off of parents who their kids got killed. Okay. For his
the,
own
the,
fucking,
the media does
for his
it
own
every day.
Pain.
This happens every day.
And they should be held to it too. Not just,
but
him.
They're not.
Okay,
that's
well,
the,
they
that's
should.
The problem.
But they
okay,
should.
Well, but do you see the
should.
Problem here?
But they should. Does that mean does that mean anything to you or not? Or you're
just
going to keep
countering
with,
I'm just saying
they're
this.
Not, but they're not. But they're not. If, but they should. But they should. It should be changed.
Okay, but it's not. My point
okay,
is, it's created.
It changed. Something
it's created
changed.
A set of standards,
good,
which are just
good,
double standards.
Good. Good. Good.
So I'm glad.
That will teach
the set of standards is double standards.
That wants to go out there and monetize on fucking parents' misery. Bro, can you imagine if your mother got killed, your mom got killed, and some fucking jack-off went out there and goes, oh, she really didn't get killed, and this is acting, and it's all bullshit, and he's making money off of it? You wouldn't be fucking happy. You wouldn't say, oh, that's free speech.
Okay, now we're getting snowflake territory, because
that's not
how much,
snowflake.
How
that's,
much do you
I'm
think
giving
the person,
you an analogy.
How much do you think the person should get for the mental suffering of listening to a conspiracy theorist, a noted conspiracy theorist?
Who gives a shit?
Just should, you know, so
if he's a noted
well,
conspiracy
disco.
Theorist
I mean,
or not.
I mean,
that's
what,
like
10
saying,
million?
How much should a noted
what?
Pedophile get away with it? How much
that's,
should a noted
no,
rapist
not,
get away with?
This is speech.
He should
this
get away
sane.
With shit.
No, wait. It's not just speech, because Alex Jones' followers would go after the parents and harass them and all this shit online and
well,
over
bro, you're
the
saying
phone.
That, okay, but that, but what you're doing is you're making a, but you're bro, it's creating. Aiding, this is opening up Pandora's box with this type of
good.
Monetary
let's
penalty.
Open
for
it up.
All right, you're
let's
gonna.
Open
the
it
funniest
up.
Thing when stuff like this happens, you get what you asked for.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
and he
what
did get what he asked
is,
for.
It is setting. It is creating such a ridiculously high bar.
So
for,
it's okay
for,
with you. So let me ask you a question.
No,
so it's
bro,
okay
I'm
with
not,
you
I'm,
for
I'm,
anybody to go out there and give misinformation, disinformation, monetize off of somebody's misery because they're a conspiracy theorist or because of freedom of speech. Is that what you're telling me? Or am I or
no,
am I gathering
no,
this wrong?
You are gathering it wrong because you're
okay.
you're completely
then explain
off
it to me better.
Okay. I never said $0. Okay.
Right.
I'm not saying that there should be bail, but $1 billion.
Okay. How much? Okay. How much?
Five. What's a well, how much is a guy worth?
I don't fucking know.
Half of his worth,
right?
I think might be the only you look at a person's worth, you see what makes him, you know, because
you know what I would say,
no, because
you know what I would say,
what
how much money did you make off their misery selling misery? Take the, all of that, just like they do in to the serial killers.
That's
you can't make
extent.
Money, you can't wait, you
right.
can't make like Jeffrey Dahmer,
right.
Jeffrey Dahmer's dad. Because you saw the series, Joe, right?
Yeah, Lionel Dahmer.
Right. He was writing a book about his son,
uh-huh.
and the families went after them, and they were like, any money you make goes to the families.
Yeah.
That I'm okay with.
I got a question for you.
That's not
that,
fair?
I'm just saying.
Well,
I just
is that not fair?
No, that's
answer
let me
the fucking question.
That's an
is
interesting
that not fair,
one.
Yes or no?
Because he didn't write about – he wrote about his experiences with Jeffrey, but he didn't write about like salacious details of the murder. He wasn't writing it to be hurtful.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I get
but
it.
They still okay,
they
but
still
let's say
money,
a serial
yeah.
killer. He's trying to make money off what
fuck
he
him.
Did.
Just like Charles Manson
right.
couldn't
so
make money.
So my question
yeah.
is, yes or no, Disco?
On what?
Should a serial killer be able to monetize a book or a DVD or an interview or anything? Should the money go to the victim?
Should they take all his money or half of it?
I'll say this. Is the guy go to jail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's locked.
Okay.
He's locked
up. So it's okay. So what, you know, what penalties? Like here's the thing. We have laws. We have penalties. We have punishments. We have things. Okay. So when, like, my thing is, like, you know, I've always been the thing, like, you know, may he who is without sin throw the first stone. Okay. So when you judge people, all right, I'd want to know if, like, okay, the type of judge you're doing, strict, if you want to turn the mirror around and say, yeah, you know, whoa, maybe if I did this to somebody, you know, so-and-so, maybe I should have been punished probably far more significantly than I would have previously thought, because I think the $1 billion for Alex Jones, you know, creating pain for families and stuff, everything is fine. So it's like, so what I'm saying is, like, maybe stuff that I did that I don't think maybe I should be, like, punished for, now I'm going to have to punish myself far more severely than I would have previously thought,
well,
based on this.
Guess, okay? What? Maybe that's going to teach you not to do it.
Okay, well, I'm going to say, I just think,
if I'm a murderer, I just, if think I'm a serial killer, right, and I'm thinking, all right, well, I'll go to jail, but I can still make money off of this. Okay, what's?
Well, let me ask you a question. Okay, if the crime, if the punishment fits the crime, like you go to jail, you lost your job, you go, you're done. Okay, should you be not allowed to generate income for yourself for when your punishment's up and you get out?
Not if it was committing heinous acts.
These are,
like,
these
if
are,
I, okay,
these
I'm going to give you an example.
So this is, right,
this,
you know,
is okay. This is, I'm going to give you an example.
OJ couldn't monetize his book.
If I'm a rapist,
book,
if I'm a pedophile, if I'm a rapist or a pedophile, and I go to jail, and then I get into detail of how I raped these little kids, what I did to them, how I tortured them, how I followed them, and now their family has to relive this and read it, and the whole world is going to have to fucking read it.
We talk about it. They don't have to read it.
They don't have to, but they're going to hear about it.
Yeah, man, you can't monetize shit like that.
You don't think it's impossible for the Jeffrey Dahmer victims to hear about what's going on, bro? It's all over the place. So, but anyways, if you're going to be monetizing off of that, yeah, I'm not down with that.
What's the law?
Like I was going to say, look at OJ. OJ tried to write a book speculating on how he might have killed them, and the Goldmans, you know, got all his profits.
I think the question is like, we get to the question of, is it fair or is it legal? If it's legal, you can't really say anything about it. Is it fair? Probably not. If you're going to, like, kill somebody and make money off it. So, you know, bro, there's tons of people that have, like, written. But, like, look at these guys, like Michael Cohen, the other guy.
Hey, they're fascinating to read to me, you know?
Right.
They didn't kill anybody.
Okay, well, here's the thing then. Say you kill somebody, right? But there's an audience of people that want to read your thoughts of what was going on through your mind, and they're willing to pay you.
Then the money goes to the victims.
I mean, do you get the money?
No. There's been a precedent established.
But why not?
It's already been established. It started with Charles Manson, when they made sure Charles Manson couldn't monetize. Now that's the standard. It's been the standard since Manson.
Right. But let me say this, because Vince brought this up on the – he was talking about the Dahmer thing with me, and I haven't seen it yet.
Ugh.
So Vince was saying that, like, a lot of the stuff – that's been in the Dahmer thing was embellished to further drive the narrative. This is one of the stories. So I guess it was the
what
thing
was
with Dahmer,
embellished.
Let me tell you. Okay, there's a few things that were embellished. I've read how, like, they basically made up some stuff to kind of, like, further the narrative. And this is one of the specific things in it. Okay, so the thing with the 14-year-old boy.
No.
Okay, and the 14-year-old boy got out.
Accurate.
Like, escaped. Okay, and then there was a black. There's two. Two black people, like
two
a black,
black girls, yeah.
Right, they found it, and the cops came out, was asking things. So Dahmer comes out, and literally convinced the cops, okay, that, you know, that was his lover. No, let me finish the story.
All right,
that was his lover, and convinced the cops that, like, hey, okay, and the cops let the guy go, and Jeffrey Dahmer ended up killing the guy, right? So the cops got, like, suspended, okay. But in the Vincent of the documentary, they made up the story that the two cops won the Cop of the Year.
No,
is that accurate? But was that part of the thing? Because I didn't see it.
They
Vince
didn't
was telling me that part of the story. Okay,
they didn't win Cop of the Year that year or something. But down the line, one of those cops did win a Cop of the Year award or a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Okay, because I haven't seen it. Because Vince was telling me that they told the story that the cops won the Cop of the Year. Like, even after this happened,
they did.
So they're just showing how, like, okay, so, you know,
they did, though.
But that's true.
Yeah, Vince is misinformed.
Are you sure about that?
I'm positive.
Yes.
Look that up.
I'm positive, dude.
I've done my deep dive already. Yeah.
Okay, I'm fact checking Vince. So next time I talk to Vince, I'll bring that because I'm just fact checking because I have not seen this.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen the documentary. I followed it when in real time when it happened.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, the lady says something like she actually goes there. She's actually at the award ceremony, if I remember correctly, Joe. And she's like, I'm just going to ask you for a favor. Just do your job next time or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they did win some Cop of the Year thing, but later on, later on.
It says here, Officer John Bazarak. Hold on, I got to scroll through so I can get you the exact award that he won.
Okay, well, what was the other thing he had a problem with?
How did they paint it on the documentary?
They just showed him holding up an award and yay and stuff like that, and the cops all cheering for him. So they made it seem like he won a police award for good police.
What was the award, Joe? Does it say? What was the second thing?
Hold on, real quick. You know how it did show on the show they were suspended and whatever? Well, they were reinstated and both received their back pay. So the suspension didn't mean anything. But he won president.
And as a matter of fact, I remember when they go into the police station, they're like, oh, at least somebody had our back, remember?
Yeah, yeah. And he also...
Because that's back then when cops stuck together, bro.
Right, you know,
and they were racist. Yeah, they were all racist. They were planning evidence, and you see it in
LA. Cops are way more white back then than so, right.
And plus, you know, it's a gay guy and a black guy and a fucking Laotian guy. They're like, fuck these guys.
Right.
What other thing did he have a problem with?
So he was elected. He was elected president of the Milwaukee Police Association, and he was given an award upon his retirement.
Yeah, which he should not have received. Yeah. But okay.
Well, I know this because it wasn't Vince's problem. But it was interesting because, like, I still been watching.
What was the second thing he had a problem with?
One of the anecdotes he said, if you watch the documentary, it's definitely like an anti-cop narrative.
Well, they fucked up. Why not? They didn't do their fucking job.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying but I will say this: I did read an article, and they were talking about how, like, it's, you know, the cops screwed up. But there's kind of like, you know, like when you have somebody, but you kind of like embellish some of the stories to try to make it give a more emphasis and stuff. Everything. Like he says, that like there's a lot of that in there. But then, like I said, I haven't seen it yet, but I did read an article that like because it mirrored like what Vince has said, that there's a definite agenda to this documentary.
What is the agenda?
You know? Basically, cops are bad, white supremacists.
Well, they were. What they did was bad. They didn't do their fucking job. They let this fucking guy go over and over and over and over. Okay. And he got away, bro. The cops ran into him, Joe, at least, what, 4 or 5 fucking times?
Yeah.
You know the weird...
He would just say, oh, we're lovers.
Yeah.
We got into a spat, and they'd go into his room and they see vibrators and shit, and they go, oh, just some queer shit.
Yeah. You know? Or
they didn't want to be involved in it. Right. Yeah. It's like, kind of turned them off.
Yeah. Well, it was 1991 with AIDS and stuff like that. But I remember the cops when they helped him bring the 14 year old back to his apartment because they helped him lead him back, even though he had his brain drilled and he was. You know, brain damage and stuff like that.
Bro, you gotta understand.
Hang on. The one cop said to the other, they're on the what do you call it? The CB radio, the whatever, communicating with the police station. He's like, yeah, we'll be at the next scene, but first my partner has to go get deloused, you know, and shit like that. So it was anti-gay too.
Yeah.
Right.
You gotta understand too, there wasn't a back then, there wasn't like a big thing of like people weren't as aware of like kind of like pedophilia and stuff and everything, but back then as they are now.
It wasn't reported.
Because, bro, there were like tons of like, you look at like a lot of rock and rollers and rock stars and everything. Bro, it was not uncommon for like 16-year-old girls,
Elvis
backstage. You know, these guys were like dating.
Bro, I saw it in wrestling, and I don't even want to say names.
Right, but like we've definitely changed as a society from that like 20, 30 years ago when that was very commonplace.
Yeah, and
it was
now,
kinda like it was kind of like not promoted, but like if you had like young girls, like yeah, it was like exactly.
And
you know,
now so you're like, right, Disco, because nowadays. If Leonardo DiCaprio, who's what, 45 or something like that?
Yeah, he's in a 23 or 24 year old, everyone sees he's a pervert.
Right. When back then you could be a 30 year old guitar player and have a 15 year old girlfriend.
Let me tell you, that's kind of rich coming from Vince, because isn't Vince the same guy that said, oh, I'm Italian. I don't give a fuck what Japanese and Mexicans are thinking, that like that New York Italian fucking dumbass.
And wasn't he
also the same guy that thought that because they wouldn't let him carry soup, in Atlanta airport that they were beer gumbo.
Yes, I agree. They were racist. Yeah. Racist.
That was not racist. You can't fucking carry soup, no matter what fucking color you are, through the fucking airport. It's
yeah.
a liquid.
Not onto the plane. Yeah.
Right. And he was like, oh, that's racist. And this black girl, he fucking, you know, and I was like, Vince, knock that shit off. But anyways. So the other thing that I wanted to bring about Frederick Douglass that I forgot, he made a very, very cool speech. And you're right. The guy's name was, I was looking it up, Joe, was the guy that you said. He was like an anti-abolitionist. Thomas Clarkson, also in Britain, was one of the last British abolitionists. And Daniel O'Connell,
right.
Yeah, was an Irish guy. But anyways, one of the things, he made a great, great speech. You got to read it. And it was something about the 4th of July and it actually has a name to it. I'm looking for it, but I can't find it. But anyways, basically it was where he was saying, why am I celebrating the 4th of July? I got nothing to celebrate. You know, I'm a 3/16 citizen. I can't vote. You know, America's done nothing for me, but just fucking, you know, bury me and my people. It's really eloquent and really telling for, you know, somebody that had no formal education. That's something that if you're interested, you should read. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up.
It's titled, What to the Slave is the 4th of July?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. It's worth reading. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up, just to show you how far ahead he was super, super, super for women's suffrage, which is women's voting rights. And so his thing was like, because he was trying to convince Lincoln, you know, that blacks should vote. And plus, he was very mad that the Confederate soldiers, when they were getting black, when they would capture black soldiers, they were torturing them and they were mutilating them. And Lincoln was, well, what do you want me to do? There's nothing I can do, you know? And he said, oh, yeah, I want you to do the same to them when you catch them. You know, he goes, why aren't we then doing this? Aren't we just as wrong as they are? And but anyways, he was really like, if you're going to do voting rights for black men, I want voting rights for women, you know, all women, not just black, but all women. So he was way, way, way ahead of his time.